The following episode of Backstory Podcast was recorded live at the 26th Annual Toronto Real Asian International Film Festival. You can listen to this episode and you can watch it on our YouTube channel. Hello and welcome to Backstory Podcast from the Toronto Real Asian International Film Festival. I'm Aram C.Y. Collier, the Artistic Director of Real Asian. We are here with the director of The Grizzly Truth, Kat Jamie. We're recording live on the day five of Real Asian. You lose track after a while. Yeah. Where The Grizzly Truth is Real Asian's centerpiece film. And it's a brand new documentary about Kat's mission to keep the spirit and the memory of the Vancouver Grizzlies basketball team alive. So we're so happy to have you here for Backstory and for Real Asian Film Festival.
Thank you, Aram. It's so great to be back. The Real Asian has been such a huge support of my career throughout the years. So, you know, I'm very excited. And to be the centerpiece film is it's just really exciting.
Yeah, it's been on rush for a while now. So
that's awesome.
So I'm, full disclosure, I'm a huge basketball fan. I am a Warriors fan, but not a bandwagon Warriors fan. I've been a fan since the late 80s.
Okay.
So
that's acceptable then.
Yeah. So a content warning for the audience. I think we're going to get into the weeds of basketball a little bit, but that's okay. Let us
nerd out.
Yes. There's just something really special about connecting to a team, mm-hmm. you know, and we see that in your films, connecting to your city, mm-hmm. To a sports team. It's your identities. It's all wrapped up in these mm-hmm. things. So that's why I'm so excited to talk about it. But so I think we'll delve into talking about the film a little bit, and mm-hmm. and one thing that was, you know, and again, since I'm a sports fan, and also this era of basketball was so kind of in the pocket of my mind, I remember
the Grizzlies,
all of the players, okay, all of cool. the team, you know, everything, right? Yeah. I remember everybody from those teams, even though I didn't follow them, right?
Yeah.
But that's how much I followed the NBA. But so I'm curious, you know, when you were making this film, mm-hmm. And when I'm watching it the first time, it's kind of like, how are you going to pull this off? Because in a way, we kind of know the ending,
yeah.
quote unquote,
yes.
right? So so what was your kind of a approach to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how are you thinking about that?
Mm-hmm.
Like the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll take the first part, right? Like, what was your approach to that?
My approach, I mean, I didn't know how the film was going to end.
Hmm.
And I mean
the ending, we know why, like we know that they left.
But I've had people come up to me after the film to be like, we had no idea how you were gonna end this film.
Mm.
Like kind of the same sentiments that you're sharing right now. I didn't know starting. I mean, there are I'm gonna say like quote unquote bad guys that everyone kind of knows. It's like Michael Heisley, was it the poor like fan attendance? Was it like everyone has like everyone kind of knows the general scapegoats that exist when it comes to the Grizzlies.
And would you say people in Vancouver now still know that?
I think the film has changed people's minds to say like it's not just one thing or like one person. I think it's just, as the film kind of mentioned, it's like it was just a series of unfortunate events that happened with the Vancouver Grizzlies.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that I learned, that it wasn't, you know, Michael Heisley or Sue Jackson or Big Country. I mean, obviously we kind of talked about Big Country and finding Big Country, but how that whole story was going to be crafted was still kind of an unknown, and how much weight. And I did go into it thinking like, okay, like I really did explore, was it Michael Heisley's fault? And doing like a ton of research, ton of interviews, trying to get... Like, I went down some, like, you know, finding out, one of the things that he did that kind of proves that his intentions were to keep the team in Vancouver was he bought this and he spent $2 million on this practice facility. So, like, I was, like, going to the city to get records just to see, you know what I mean? So I really did a deep dive into, like, kind of every possible fan theory that's out there. But I guess one of the main things I knew I wanted to do, I didn't realize it would be the ending, was I was like, I should go to Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what I was going to do there necessarily. It was only after thinking about my trip to Memphis, after months of, I just knew I wanted to go there. But then after a few months of like thinking of the idea, I was like, okay, I need to talk to like, who's, I need to find me. Who's like the version of me in Memphis. And then I took it a step further to be like, no, I need to find like 7-year-old me.
Yeah.
Who is kid version of me who loves the Memphis Grizzlies as much as I love the Vancouver Grizzlies. And I didn't know that's all, you know, you, I think as filmmakers, you kind of have a premise, but you don't know what's going to happen when you actually, you know, find the person or meet the person that you've been, you have this just a vague idea of what you want to do.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to ask you about Memphis in a little bit, but you know, I want to stay on this, this kind of your intention going into it, right? Because, you know, in some ways it feels like this film and, you know, your previous work on the Grizzlies is like, it's kind of like a community memory project, you know? There's so much tied up to that, you know, like I'm from San Francisco and there's this kind of like, you know, second city mentality, right? So it of being the kind of like, I'm doing air quotes, little brother, that kind of thing. Yeah. And there's this kind of like underdog mentality. So how did that kind of like play into your intent about like documenting memory of the team? I mean, do you feel like people are losing memory of the team? I mean, outside of your kind of like super fan like network.
True. I mean, it's interesting because the Vancouver Grizzlies merch is like so popular. In Vancouver especially, but even outside Vancouver, like you go to New York, go to the NBA store, you ask the workers, like, what's your best-selling jersey? And they're like, Mike Bibby jersey. I think there are a lot of NBA fans now who weren't even born when the Grizzlies were here, but they just, everyone's rocking our jerseys and our merch because like they love the trim and they love the colors and all this stuff. And I'm now losing my train of thought, but I do think that the memory of the Grizzlies is kind of fading if you're not a huge diehard fan. So that is definitely one of the reasons why like I wanted to make this film. But also, I think you hit it. It's like I see myself as an underdog for so many different reasons. And that's also why I love the Grizzlies, because like they're a team of underdogs, you know, the Raptors and the Grizzlies. You guys obviously, like, Toronto still has their team. We lost ours. And you know, the Raptors with the, you know, We the North slogan, it was like, you know, there were two teams, you know, and we were one of them. And so I think it's has become my mission to like, to remind people, like, there were two Canadian teams. And yes, we were underdogs, but the team was still so loved. And they meant so much to the community. I've learned so much through the Grizzlies because of their underdog status. I definitely feel like all my films, but especially, you know, The Grizzly Truth, Finding My Country, are ways to give them their time to shine. Like, that's kind of one of my goals of both those films.
Yeah. I mean, though I live in Toronto, I'm still a Warriors fan. Back. So yeah, don't bring me into it, but I do know the feeling of like following like in a, you know, a franchise like mired in futility, you know, like, and there's something about like the cause anyway, you know, like sticking with them. Right. Now, in terms of approaching like the craft of the film and the approach of it, you know, you frame this one somewhat similarly to like Finding Big Country, but but you know, it takes on a kind of like a mystery, right? Like a detective. You know, hey, you have all these kind of like interstitials and tropes with it. So and that's also very performative in a way, right? So what were some influences that you were bringing into it?
Well, we went like in one of the sequences, like we went full tilt, like detective, like film noir, like where it was like we literally started the film with like with me in a detective room and being like, you know, Cat Jamie, like Grizzly, like fan detective. It was just like, it was so over the top, so we cut it right away. But we, you know, my editor Greg Ng and I, we just kind of played around with a few ideas, and yeah, sometimes we like went too far. But I think it was I don't know, we had some film shoots here in Toronto, and I remember one shoot we just hadn't, like, I don't know, I love brainstorming with my team, and we were just having, after a long shoot day, the team was like, you know, having some drinks outside on the lawn, and everyone was just like, what if there was like Super Grizz? Like, what if we got Super Grizz and like Super Grizz is chasing you down a hall? And we were just like, couldn't stop laughing. We were laughing so hard about this idea. And then we were like, no, let's actually do this. So we got someone to make this costume, which is like so lifelike. And I didn't really know what Super Grizz was, even when we were shooting it. It was like this kind of, you know, not a funny gag, but it was like, yeah, this funny thing that like, that we were trying to incorporate. But then as we were filming, I was like, oh, I know it. Like, Super Grizz is like my subconscious. Mm. And like, he's trying to help me, like figure out, you know, this mystery with me. So I then understood even more like who Super Grizz was in the context of the film. But yeah, no, it was just my team and I kind of, you know, throwing out ideas, and you know, some goofy ones stuck, like that one.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I'm not an actor at all, and it was like, oh my gosh, there's so many bloopers, and you know, it's interesting because we kind of went back and forth because my team really loved the scenes with me and Super Grizz, and I was like, let's cut it, but they really loved it, and it was like, it made the film a bit different, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's not too many sports documentaries that you see that does a few things. I think The Grizzly Truth does a few things differently. And that's one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's the performance aspect of those kind of like staged scenes, but there's a performance aspect, you know, and tradition of performance mm-hmm. in documentary as like the kind of like muckraker, like documentarian, yes. like Michael Moore kind yes. of stuff. Was those type of documentaries like your influence as well?
I mean, yes, to an extent, for sure. But, you know, I never set out to be like a Michael Moore of like my films. And I've somehow, you know, with Finding Me Country and The Grizzly Truth. Well, Finding Me Country, like, I'm arguably the main character. With this one, I'm for sure like the main character that like you, that I'm, you know, that the audience is being led by. With Finding Me Country, I never meant to do this. I didn't want to do this, to be honest. Like, I can be a ham. Like, I do love being on camera as well. But with Finding Me Country, I was finding every excuse to not be in the film. And I remember the night before we went to Oklahoma, I called my producer, Michael Grant, and I was like, I really need to be in it. Like, let's just shoot it for safety. Let's shoot everything just with Bryant, just in case in the edit we're like, we don't need me. And Michael was like, sure, we can do that. But honestly, Kat, like, I think it's just going to be so much more fun to see you both on screen. And I think as like a female Filipina, like we should, like, how do I say this? Like, I didn't want people to think that like I wanted to be in the limelight, or, you know, you're not used to like seeing that so much. Mm. So I was like, you know, people are not going to want to see that. But now that after Finding the Country, I was like, oh, there's so much power in like, you know, us being represented behind and in front of the camera.
Totally.
And like, as a kid, I would have loved to have something like Finding the Country where it's like, oh my God, like that's me, right? Like I can, like, you know, and so I now understand the power of that. And so with The Grizzly, and in fact, even after the success of Finding the Country, I was still, because I wanted to make The Grizzly Truth or like a feature length film of The Grizzlies. But for that one, even when I was making Finding the Country, I was like, okay, for the feature film, I won't be in it. I'm not going to be in it. I want it to be like a more traditional documentary. But then when we were pitching it to people like Crave and Uninterrupted, everyone was like, okay, but we want you in it now. Mm. And so yeah. And you know, I have fun on, it's stressful to be director and subject, but I was like, okay, if you like, let's do it. And I think I was waiting for permission with Finding Me Country for people. And thankfully my producer, Michael, was like, no, you need to be, it's okay to be on camera, and you should be on camera.
Yeah. No, that's the power of like having like honest collaborators, right?
Yeah.
To really give you that perspective, mm-hmm. to like take you outside of your own head sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. But no, I mean, I think it's so vital, you know, and it's so like, you know, unique of a perspective that mm-hmm. you bring to it each time. And, And, you know, Romeo Candido is our Canadian artist spotlight. And mm-hmm. so, you know, he was introing one of his short films, Shorty, and he's talking about, like, you know, Filipinos love Jesus, pork, and basketball.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
So you know, we got to represent that as well,
yes,
right?
So, yeah.
I wanted to ask you, okay, so if you're listening, watching right now, there's some spoilers that we're going to talk about.
Like,
so if you
ears.
Don't
yeah.
want to hear it, yeah. you can fast forward okay. for a little bit. And hopefully, Joe, our producer,
you can
remind me that once we're past the spoiler point,
okay.
We'll have the time. Okay. So I want to ask you about Steve Francis.
Yes.
You know, you set it up, and I think, you know, rightfully so, that he was one of these villains that mm-hmm. you were investigating, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you had the experience of finding Bryant Reeves, right? Mm-hmm. But that was somebody who you revered.
Yes.
Steve Francis was not somebody you
no.
did, right?
No.
So, and we see it in the film, yeah. right? That how much of a surprise. So just take us into that, like
yeah.
a little bit of the backstory of like trying to find him.
Sure.
And what it was like to meet him.
Yeah. Okay. So, behind the scenes tidbit, I got in touch with him about 2 years prior to actually meeting him.
And he remembered that.
He remembered that. I messaged him on Instagram on finding, maybe it was, I forget which account it was. It might have been like Finding McKenzie or my personal account. And he responded. And I said, hey, like, you know, my name is Kat Jamie. I'm making a feature length film about the Grizzlies. I'd love for you to be a part of it, blah, 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 blah. I made a film called Finding McKenzie. And he said yes. And I was like, I caught Steve. Because I knew I was like, I can't tell the story without Steve Francis.
Yeah, it's vital.
It's vital.
Yeah,
there's no, like, that's going to be the main critique of this film. It's like, well, she didn't get Steve Francis, mm-hmm. right? And so you kind of need, you need McKenzie, Bibi, Sharif, and Steve Francis. Those mm-hmm. are the four, like, and Sue Jackson, the five. Yeah. And so, and then he ghosted me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he blocked me on yeah. Instagram. And I was like, and so that didn't stop me. I was like, message it. Then I was like, okay, well, I have other accounts, so I was like messaging him on like other accounts. And if I were to
your
pull
burners,
up, if I were to pull up my like thread, it would literally just be like all blue. I emailed him. I tried like so, and then I was like, but I knew I was like, I knew he. I saw something on Instagram where he commented on a video about him that someone else had posted at one of the sports networks. And he commented something like, you know, if you want the real story, why don't you get in touch with me? And as soon as I saw that, I was like, if I can just get 5 minutes in front of him and I explain to him like what I want to do and have his, like, I don't want to tell the story. It doesn't feel right to tell the story without you, because mm-hmm. whether you're in it or not, we are going to be talking about you. And I would much rather you tell your own story in your own words.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know that if I just have 5 minutes in front of him, I think I can convince him. And so I honestly, and this was like, when did I meet him? We only had like 4 months left to edit the film, and we still hadn't gotten Steve Francis. And so I'm panicking and I'm going like, we're running out of time. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of doing like a social media call out. I was like writing, you know, six degrees of separation, and like just making a map to be like, hey, who are the NBA players that I know? Like, how do they bring me to Steve Francis? And thankfully, our researcher, Gerald Narciso, like randomly set me on a Monday morning. He's like, Steve Francis is doing a autograph signing mm-hmm. in Houston. Steve Francis like posted a story on Instagram. And I got on the phone with my producer, Michael. I was like, it was Monday. And I was like, and this autograph signing was on Saturday. I was like, I don't care what needs to happen, but I need to go to Houston. You need to send me and my cinematographer, Mike Dinsmore, to Houston. So we got it all done. So I fly in on Friday. And then, but I was relieved because I was like, even if he says no, I'm going, like, we have, I'm at least attempting.
Yeah.
And that's all I need.
Yeah.
I need the attempt to go find him. And again, another spoiler alert, what happens in the, you actually have to take a photo first with him. You take a photo first and mm-hmm. then you get him to sign something.
Yeah.
So, and I'm walking in, I have my Grizzlies jersey on, and I see him, and it's Steve Francis, right? Like, I'm still, even though he's like a villain, like, he's still an NBA superstar. So I'm starstruck as well. Like, good thing I have a mask on, because I'm freaking out, like, underneath my mask. And I'm like, that's Steve Francis, right? Like, and so, oh my gosh, it's so awkward. But the photo session, he's just like kind of, he's like looking, you can tell now that I know what happens, you can tell he's trying to place me.
Yeah.
He's like looking at me, and I'm like, hey, Steve, like, I came all the way from Vancouver. And he's like, cool. Like, really want to go there one day. And I'm like, cool. And it was like, that was it. And I was like, oh God, he's like so not impressed and does not care that I'm here. And so I was like, oh, this is such a bust. Like, this is such a waste of like time and money. But I had printed out like, I hired an artist from New York City that I really love, Lou, I made him a gift. It was like a poster that had like, as a cartoon of him with like David Stern and him shaking hands, the Grizzlies logo. Cause he's, my whole thing was like, you were still part of Vancouver history, whether the good part or bad part, like you're still a part of it. Right. So, and I had like on the back of it, I wrote like a note with like my contact information and like what I wanted to do. And you know, for these like autograph signings, you literally have like a minute, like 30 seconds. Yeah. It's like, hey, please sign this photo, done. But you saw like he recognized me, and he's like, yeah, like you're the one who wrote Finding the Country. And then I just like, oh God, like I was not making any sense. I was stuttering like crazy. Like if you were to literally listen to it, and I'm just like, I want you to tell your story. And my thing was like, whatever you have to give me, I'll take. So if it's 5 minutes now, if it's 10 minutes after the signing, if it's, we had one more day in Houston, just in case he said, okay, sure, let's do an interview tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I was like, we have a crew on standby if you want to do this tomorrow, or if you want me to fly back, like whatever you want to do. And then, so as you saw, like he actually said he wanted to come back to Vancouver, but he then afterwards he invited me and my team to his place in his home where he grew up in DC. But yeah, so that's kind of how it happened. And honestly, like Steve has become a really good friend of mine, and we like catch up like via text, FaceTime, like like we'll message each other, and he's become like a really good friend. Yeah. And he's just such a great guy. Like I do, do I wish he still played for Vancouver? Of course, like I do. But I can now say that I understand. Like my whole thing was like, maybe we can better understand each other, and maybe we can better understand that situation so that we're not filled with anger.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, and you make the point in the film that like, and just remembering that time and the impact he did have in Houston, like absolutely, he would have been that star that the Grizzlies needed, he had such a huge impact in those first few years in Houston. So, but it is really one of the great moments in the film to see like that kind of like that we can give a little bit of grace to each other. Right. Yeah. You know, and especially as fans, right, we get so worked up and like, and it's easy to create narratives, right. That fit what we expect. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's nice to see people, be expansive and, as he's matured too, right? Mm-hmm. So we get his story. Mm-hmm. So, okay, spoiler, time is over.
Headphones? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So so I wanted to ask you a couple of things. So a few teams, this is part of the history of sports, right? Mm-hmm. Is teams leave. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they never come back. Sometimes they do, right? Mm-hmm. So Charlotte, for instance, they left. They got an expansion team. Mm-hmm. It was the Bobcats, and then they renamed it their old name. Mm-hmm. Seattle lost the Sonics. There is talk about expansion, but, it seems like Seattle, Las Vegas seem to be the ones that are on more of the priority. So I guess, how do you feel? Like, in some ways I feel like I read this film as the grisly truth is you accepting that they'll never come back.
I mean, I've accepted that the Grizzlies might not come back, but I'm hopeful that the NBA will come back. Mm-hmm. I obviously like what I love the team called the Grizzlies to come back? Yes, for sure. But again, I think it's the whole, like, I was very, this film was all about like closure. Mm-hmm. And I got it from like so many different like angles. Like with the Steve Francis thing, I felt like I got closure. It's like, you know, I understand that situation more, so I can't really be angry.
Mm-hmm.
With the Memphis thing, you know, it's again like, oh man, I was like, I was definitely one of the most outspoken Vancouver Grizzly fans to be like, you know, when they brought back their the jerseys.
Yeah, the throwback.
And I was like, I know, I'm pretty sure I was on Daily Hive, like, you know, being interviewed to be like, those are our jerseys, like, don't wear our jerseys, right? Like, I was definitely like one
of
those.
Did they say Vancouver?
They said Vancouver. Okay. They did. I'm pretty sure they said Vancouver, and that's why a lot of fans were upset,
mm-hmm.
which I understood.
Yeah.
But again, like, I think it's so easy to be a hater when you don't know the person.
Yeah.
And it's way harder to hate something once you get to know it.
Yeah.
And so that's what the trip to Memphis was for me. You know, I made so many friends, like even like friends who worked within the stadium. Like I got to like, and you know, we got to connect and. Yeah. And then obviously like the meeting Antonio senior, like Antonio and Antonio Braxton Jr.
Yeah.
They are so lovely. And Memphis really, because a lot of them had seen or knew about Finding Big Country. So they knew who I was and they like a lot of people like really welcomed me and embraced me and they, you know, let me shoot the t-shirt cannon, which I've always wanted to do as a kid.
Yeah.
Like as a
Vancouver
group.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I was very torn that trip. And I know it sounds so funny and it sounds so dumb in so many ways. Like it's like this NBA team that like, but I really got emotional during that trip and I didn't think I was going to get emotional. I actually, the first night there, and it's part of it is in the film, like I cried like during one of the scenes and I wasn't expecting that. And it's funny because like, this film is like, you know, it's very lighthearted. It's comical in many ways. Like, you know, I'm doing all these like goofy things with all these NBA superstars, like riding a tandem bike with George Lynch on Santa, you know what I mean? Like, so when I got to Memphis and it was just so emotional for me. And I wasn't expecting it to be, and I was like, oh yeah, at the heart of it, this team really did mean so much to me as a kid. As like, I just thought of like all the memories of like me and my Lolo, grandfather, and my dad going to games. And I was like, it made me so sad that we don't have that anymore in Vancouver. And then I was like, but they're here, like they're here in Memphis. But you know, again, like it is, and sorry, Aram, I'm forgetting, I'm now just rambling and I'm forgetting the question that you asked. But yeah, it's just, oh yeah, here it is. So I was definitely torn. Because I was like, I can't say my motto or like the thing that I always said was like, bring back the Grizzlies. And after my time in Memphis, I was like, I can't actually say that anymore. Mm-hmm. So now it's changed, you know, to, you know, bring back the NBA. Like I do. And I am hopeful. I know that it's not going to happen right away. Like Las Vegas will probably get a team. Seattle. I mean, Seattle deserves a team 100%.
Totally,
like they deserve a team more than Vancouver does for sure. But I do. You know, there shouldn't be just one team in Canada. And I'm hopeful that Vancouver will be that, you know, we'll get a team back.
Yeah. Yeah. So many things I want to follow up on.
Yeah.
You know, so number one, like, so are you following the Grizzlies? Are you doing the gritty with John?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm not, it's funny because everyone in Vancouver, well, not everyone, but a lot of people were like, you know, well, there's some who I really, who were like, you know, who are like, you know, we can get behind cheering for Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that I'm a diehard Memphis Grizzly fan. I'm still 100,000% a Vancouver Grizzlies fan. But again, like I can cheer on the Memphis Grizzlies decked out in all my like Vancouver Grizzlies gear.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'll definitely be cheering them on. I want to go back to Memphis to go to a game. And I, you know, I definitely hope they do well. I feel like I probably feel the same way I do about Memphis as I do the Toronto Raptors, where it's just like, it's bittersweet.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I want you to do well, but like, I also like, I'm sad that I don't, you know, Vancouver and, you know, my city doesn't have a team either.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, and I'm sure lots of people ask you this, but I've never asked you this. Like, how did you feel in 2019? How did that make you feel when the Raptors won the championship?
It was, bittersweet. I mean, I was cheering them on in my We the North t-shirt, like literally with my Grizzlies like flag like draped around me. It was such a happy, like amazing moment for all Canadians, mm-hmm. for all basketball, like Canadian basketball fans. But at the same time, it was also depressing, I think, for Vancouver Grizzly fans, because it was like, could that have been us? And, you know, it's also just so incredible. Like, it took 25 years? Yeah, because no. Well, like over 20 years for you guys to get a championship. And like, we finally did it. Like, I definitely do feel like the Raptors win was like part of our win as well, like collectively. But yeah, you just can't help but wonder, like, could that have been us? And, you know, if it took, you know, the Raptors, you know, 20 plus years, like if we were ever get a team, take 20 plus, like, I'm going to be like, what, 70 or like 80? like this is like, I'll be a grandma. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was sad to think about that, because it's like, I don't think in my lifetime, if we get a team, like we might not be champions.
Yeah.
But again, I want a team back in Vancouver, not for me. I always say this because I do watch and follow the NBA, but not as much. Like, the NBA doesn't mean as much to me now as it did to me when I was a kid. And like, the magic of that, of the NBA as a kid, having a team in your own backyard, like, oh man, like the Grizzlies, I feel like really, they really inspired me as a kid, and which has informed me like throughout my life, and especially my career as a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have a job if it weren't for the Vancouver Grizzlies, right? So,
I mean, you mentioned, well, it's kind of my last question for this segment. You know, you mentioned this kind of catharsis, this closure. You know, you've been on a kind of a run of making a few films about the Grizzlies, right? And so, you know, and I guess this is kind of like your sequel or something like that. Like,
yeah.
You know, is this the end for you in terms of like making films about this? And has there been concern for you about just like being that person?
Yeah.
Like, oh, Cat Jamie just makes movies about the Grizzlies.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, I would say it's a trilogy, but I've made more than 3 Vancouver Grizzly films, right? I haven't, it's honestly been such a whirlwind. I haven't really processed everything quite yet. But it does, like, the, you know, there are some filmmakers who have asked me, like, you know, like, aren't you going to be glad when this is all done? And the truth is, like, the Grizzlies bring me so much joy. And it's been such a treat and an honor. And it's just so much fun that, like, as my job, I get to research the Vancouver Grizzlies. And I have been doing that for the past, you know, since, you know, I mean, I've been dreaming about this since film school in like 2010, or like, you know, when I graduated 2011, 2010. Really started this in 2015. It's been like 7 years of just like waking up and like doing Grizzlies research, which is like so wild. Like, I sometimes can't like fathom it, but I'm still going to be it's going to take me a while to process it. But I think what's next is, honestly, like what I've been thinking is the book. Like, I feel like I might want to write a book about the Grizzlies, just to, and I will, you know, continue my filmmaking career. But the Grizzlies truly bring me happiness, and I've collected so many stories. Like, we did, I must have done over 100 plus interviews, and so much had to hit the cutting room floor because of time. You know, it's an hour, like, how do you condense 6 years into an hour and a half like movie? But at the same time, like, I am also really excited. There are other stories that I want to tell. There are other topics that I'm passionate about. Like, I'm very passionate about the environment. The Real Asian actually programmed my film Paradise Island, like, mm-hmm. my first film, right after film school. But, you know, so I'm excited to tell other stories, while keeping some version of the Vancouver Grizzlies alive, whether that be in movie form or, you know, when the Grizzlies came to Vancouver for the premiere of The Grizzly Truth, there was this energy that we created by bringing them back. And the Grizzlies that were in attendance were like, Kat, let's build off this momentum. Let's keep it going. And so there's talk about, you know, whether or not is it like a yearly thing where we have like basketball camps where we bring Vancouver Grizzlies back to honor the team. So I think as long as there's like something percolating like in the background that's just about the Vancouver Grizzlies, whether that be events in the community or, you know, whatever shape, whatever form it takes, I'll be happy. But there's definitely going to still have to be some sort of Grizzlies thing happening in my life.
Yeah. Okay. Well, a true fan never stops. Gosh, so.
Yeah.
Again, you know, it's such an important like community memory project. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad we were able to talk about it. So we're gonna take a break,
okay,
and then we will eat some food and ask you some quick questions.
I love it. Let's do
okay.
it. Yeah.
All right. All right. Okay, we're back, and we have our food session. It's kind of a thing we were trying out called Come Eat With Me. So you, like a lot of other filmmaking guests, like how we've been sharing food together. So
I love it.
So a little backstory. So we're trying to, you know, do some creative things in terms,
yeah,
of like what we give people to eat.
Yeah.
And I was like, so I have a long story. So I was like, ooh, let's eat bear claws, like a pastry, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, grizzlies, bear claws.
Yeah.
And then some of our my coworkers were like, what's that?
Yeah.
And I was like, do you know what that is?
No.
Oh, I'm like, is this a generational thing? I'm anyway. And because it's like a pastry, right?
Okay.
That is like, it kind of like looks like this. And
yeah,
it's like a baked thing and it,
or maybe,
it's like a filling.
Maybe I would know if I saw a photo, but... Or maybe not. Maybe
well,
not.
Well, so it's, I mean, yeah, you can Google it.
Yeah.
But so, and then we started talking about bear paws, which are just terrible. So you don't have to eat it, but I did get some.
Oh, that's awesome.
They are neither cookies nor brownies, and they're an abomination. But they're school safe and peanut free. So,
oh my gosh, that's awesome.
But yeah, so we can.
Yeah, I want to see what this.
Maybe some people like them, but oh, there's two in here. Yeah,
there you go.
Looks like a
bear paws.
Yeah.
Cheers.
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 Okay, and then the fried chicken. Again, trying to think of something creative, and you know, like there's the whole theory. Well, I think it's kind of proven now that like chickens are dinosaurs. So we're eating some raptors as well.
That's
so
hilarious.
So
I love it. Okay.
That's the idea. So go ahead and dig,
yeah,
in. Talk with your mouth full.
Okay.
It's all good.
This is cool. Thank you.
And help yourself to a drink. There's some sides here. Yeah, make sure you get that crunch in,
mm-hmm,
there, right?
For the what's it called? ASMR people.
Yeah, ASMR. Some mukbang here.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I have so many questions.
Yes. Let's do it.
I guess, let me start still on the film. You know, you've been able to show it a few times already.
Mm-hmm.
What's a question about the film that nobody's asked you yet that, like, you'd kind of like to share, that you would like people to know?
That's a good question. Okay, wait, can we come back to,
yeah,
that?
We'll come
let
back
me,
to
that's
it.
A good,
okay,
yeah,
I'll start you off with some other ones.
Okay
you know, you mentioned Mike Bibby. That was somebody that you really were going, mm-hmm, to have in the film. Mm-hmm. So just how swole was Mike Bibby?
Oh my gosh. Like crazy, like, but he worked out so he invited us to his place in 2019. He was the first NBA player that we interviewed after Big Country. And yeah, man, even in 2019, he was just so jacked. And yeah. Like, we had to plan our day based on when he went to the gym.
Really?
And he was, like, at the gym for,
like... He's, like, a freak about
yeah,
it, huh?
Yeah. He was at the gym for, like, a few hours and then would come... And then we would, like, schedule our interviews to do with him. But he was... Yeah, I mean, the Grizzlies were all so nice. Like, I mean, the ones that said yes and, you know, invited us to their home or, you know, invited us to do an interview. But Mike was... Yeah, I was at his place. Like, we were in Oklahoma. We were in Phoenix like 3 days. And like, when he was at the gym, he literally gave us like acts. He's just like, come into the house. And he has like a, he lives in a, like, what's it called? Like, a subdivision. Like, it's just gated area. And it's just like houses for his entire family. Oh. So it's like his brother, his sister, his other brother. It's like 4 or 5 houses or complex. There's like a playground for his kids, and then he has the biggest house.
Okay.
Which he says is yeah. So, but he was so cool, but yeah, like just super big.
So for people who may not know, like he had been retired for, you know, a while, and so people
played for the Big Three. He played on the Big Three. Right.
But so people hadn't really seen him, and then there was this picture that became just went on, you know, people on NBA Twitter were like, "Whoa, what happened to Mike Bibby?" So it became Swole Bibby. That
yeah.
was the whole,
cuz he wasn't like he wasn't particularly like big when he was in the NBA, right?
Yeah. He's huge. So
good question.
I thought I liked in Finding Big Country there's some clips of you playing as a kid, right? Mm-hmm. You grew up playing basketball mm-hmm. in leagues and whatnot. And I want you to have no shame.
Okay.
Don't feel, don't be modest in any way
okay.
when you answer this question. Oh, no. So what kind of player were you? And who, if you were to compare yourself to an NBA player, what was your game like?
So I was point guard because I had good handles, but I actually wish... They made me shooting. And I did love being the point guard because I loved being like the leader on the floor, that type of thing. But I think I would have done, and I think my career would have been a bit longer had I been a shooting guard. Because I definitely, like, even when I watched like old footage of me as a kid, like no one taught me how to shoot. But when I watch like old footage, I'm like, that's perfect form. Like no one, like it just came naturally to me. I mean, I'm not going to say Steph Curry because that's like no one. Steph is unreal. I mean, I'm not obviously like you're a Warriors fan.
Oh,
he's like, he's unreal.
He's an outlier in terms of shooters. Yeah.
I mean, like who is a good, I mean,
Lillard.
No, I don't even want to.
Yeah. No modesty here.
No,
I said that's the rule.
Yeah, that's the rule. Who, you know, Muggsy because he's, you know, like small, but like fast. Who else? I'm just trying to think of like a who was a great shooter, but I want to like pick someone like from like back in the day. My gosh, he was a Vancouver Grizzlies player. I'm forgetting his name. These are great questions, and I'm now like
I should have sent them to you in advance.
Yeah, no. This is good. Who else was a great shooter like in the 90s? Chris Mullin.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There you go. Let's just go with Chris Mullin.
Okay. Chris Mullin, Glenn Rice, Dennis Scott.
Dennis Scott played for the Grizzlies too.
Oh right.
Yeah, just for a few seasons or forget how long.
Okay.
Let's go with Chris Mullin.
Okay. No, that's funny about the shooting thing because, like, I mean, I didn't play organized basketball, mm-hmm. but I loved playing. And because I think about, like, I asked this question to my friends, right? Like, and I realized, like, in retrospect that, like, I would always say, oh, it's kind of like early career Tony Parker, just like drive, don't shoot, just drive.
Yeah.
And I realized I played that way because I didn't get contact lenses for a long time.
So you needed to be close?
I was like, I'm like not a good shooter. It just got in my head. Like, oh, I'm not a good shooter. It's like, oh, because you can see the rim.
Yeah, yeah, that would help. I mean? Yeah.
So for kids out there, get corrective lenses. Yeah. How about Do you have a film that changed your life?
Oh, man. I don't know if I have a film that changed my life. I have, like, favorite films that I obsess over. And, like, yeah. I have a few. Okay, there's, yeah, Stories We Tell, Sarah Pauly, like, such, like, just the editing of it, the storytelling of it, the layers of it. I absolutely love. Like, it's just, I'm always so mind-blown with that film.
Yeah.
And not that, I mean, Finding Me Country is such a different story, but, like, I knew Finding Me Country is a simple story, but it actually has many layers to it. And, like, that's why I knew I should be in the film as well, because, you know, I have, so Finding Me Country, there's a story of Bryant, which is just, that's, like, one of the threads. But then there's, like, my story. There's a story of, like, failure. There's, like, and then how do you, like, weave those in between? And then there's so much archival. There's, like, NBA footage archival. There's, like, my photographs, video footage. There's my audio journals that I never thought I'd share. Mm-hmm. There's, like, there's just so many things. And, like, our editor, Greg Ng, weaves it in so well that you don't even realize, like, how complex the story is. And, like, you know, Stories You Tell is inspiration for, like, all the documentaries I make, because I think a great documentary has many layers. Yeah. And so anyway, so yeah, Stories We Tell. I love Cutie and the Boxer.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, I love 30 for 30s. So the Fab Five is, like, my favorite 30 for 30. Like, I watched that on repeat. And then there's, taking inspiration from a narrative film or a narrative film that I love is just, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Okay. So good. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now in the other direction, you have, like, a guilty pleasure that you're kind of, like, ashamed to admit that you like.
I mean, I'm a pretty anxious person, and so I, like, I have my, like, I'm gonna change this back to, like, TV shows that I just, like, need in the background.
Oh.
I mean, it's not even a guilty pleasure or a hidden guilty pleasure, because everyone knows that I, like, Friends is, like, it's just, like, my go-to.
Mm.
I love Friends. I need, like, I'm having a bad day. Just, they're, like, my actual friend. I consider Friends to be, like, my actual friends. So, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Friends. Yeah. That's, like, my go-to. Okay. Guilty pleasure.
All right. All right. Maybe we've had a little bit of time. What's a question nobody's asked you yet that you'd like to share about
the film? I think what my favorite part of the Grizzly Truth, and which is, like, I'm so excited for people to watch, is me sharing the Filipino, like, background and the culture of, like, how much we love basketball. Mm-hmm. I get so excited when, just for, like, for other Filipino, for the Filipino members in the audience, because, like, you know, just highlighting that aspect in a film, I'm, like, you know, like, obviously, like, very proud of, and I'm excited to, it's like, oh, I can't wait for them. Like, I don't want to tell anyone that, like, we're going to be talking about this, and it's a big part of to me, it's a big part of the film and my story. So I'm really excited about that. And I guess what's interesting is with Finding Me Country, obviously, it takes a personal turn all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made the film, one of the reasons, that's what made the film great, is this, like, personal aspect. And that goes for, like, any story, you know, any film that I love watching, it's usually, you know, when the audiences, gets to be in on a personal aspect of the filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so with The Grizzly Truth, my team and I were like, okay, like, we've already, how do you do that again with this film? If we've already done it with Finding Me Country, like, what else is there to share? And how do we hit that same note, but make it different and make it better?
Mm-hmm.
And immediately, like, I already knew, even in the early stages of The Grizzly Truth, I was like, I already know what I'm going to share. And I already know what part of my story needs to be told.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Grizzlies, with Finding Me Country, yeah, it's all about failure and, like, my personal experience with failure. And it was great because it did relate to Brian's story. And there was, like, this parallel that I could draw between the two. But for the Grizzly film, I was like, yeah, no one, and it was something that I had never actually shared with, like, literally anyone. And it was like this connection that I felt with the Grizzlies because of my Filipino mm-hmm. like heritage. And I think as, you know, obviously like I say this in the film, but I honestly remember feeling so proud when I learned that basketball was the national sport of the Philippines, because it was like, oh yeah. And I think as second generation Canadians, like you're just grasping at anything to tie you to like what makes you Filipino and what connects you to, you know, the Philippines, and what makes you Canadian, what are your roots here in Canada? Mm-hmm. And so, as I mentioned, like I was naturally good at basketball. And so when I found out that, yeah, that basketball is a national sport of the Philippines, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense because I'm Filipino. And like, I finally had something that I could like latch onto that was part of my identity, that, you know, and then because the Grizzlies were in town, it was like, and that's why I love the Grizzlies, and the Grizzlies are, you know, they're, you know what I mean? Like, so it was like this thing that gave me roots in Canada and the Philippines. Yeah. And one of the reasons why the Grizzlies were so important to me. And that's something that I like never really talked about or shared with anyone. But obviously got to do this in this film, which is why, yeah, one of the main reasons I'm really excited to like to share it with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially the Filipino community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Okay, just one last one is very, very important and contentious. And we ask everybody on the who comes on this is so you can only choose one of these. Rice.
Oh yeah.
Noodles.
Okay.
Bread.
Easy.
Or potato.
Oh my gosh, so easy.
And why?
Rice.
100%.
100%
right.
Yeah, like that's okay. Not even a question.
Well, good, because we have the rice.
yeah. Rice, like I can't. It's not a meal. I'm still hungry if I don't have rice a meal.
Yeah.
Like this is like, and yeah, rice.
Okay.
100% rice.
Yeah.
Does anyone else say anything different? I mean, I guess
it's
noodles.
Heated. It's heated. Yeah, yeah.
Does anyone pick potatoes?
Rarely, okay. But somebody did other day.
I mean, my stepdad is English, and he, like, for him, it's potatoes. But he's, like, now, like, eats rice with us.
Yeah, bring him over.
Yeah. So, okay, that's a great question.
Yeah,
I can see the gloves coming off for that one.
Well,
yeah.
noodles is, you know, is the...
I understand that, too. Yeah. But as a Filipino, yeah, it's rice.
Oh, yeah.
With everything. Yeah.
Okay, and actually the last question, so you know, what's next for you, what's next for the film?
So I'm working on I have a few films that are kind of in the works. I'm co-directing a film with my really great friend Asia Youngman about the 2011 Vancouver hockey riots, so that one's going to be coming out I think in 2023. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed. I'm developing another an anthology with a Filipina Canadian filmmaker, Kim Albright, and then I'm directing the Christine Sinclair documentary. Okay. So there's a few things that are kind of going like happening while like traveling and starting to promote the grisly truth.
Mm-hmm. So what about the film? Where is it going?
So the film, I'm going to be in Toronto again next month, because the grisly truth is having its theatrical debut here in Toronto, and we're going to planning on making another big splash like we did in Vancouver. But it's going to be playing in theaters across Canada, and then we'll be playing at various festivals, and then we'll be on Crave in the new year. And then trying to figure out, we have an American distributor, international distributor, who's shopping it around right now as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Well, yeah, with lots more ahead for you. So, wow, very busy. So that's all the time we have today. I want to thank Kat Jamie for being here on Backstory, being live recorded at Real Asian Film Festival. I'm host RMCY Collier. We have Joseph Chung mixing and producing. Please like and subscribe to Backstory. Give us a 5-star review on your favorite platform. You can reach out to us at backstory@realasian.com. For more information about Real Asian Film Festival, go to realasian.com. And thanks.
Thanks, Aram.
You've been listening to the Backstory podcast from the Toronto Real Asian International Film Festival. Please like and subscribe and give us a 5-star review on your favorite platform. You can watch these episodes on Real Asian's YouTube channel too. And we love hearing from you, so write to us at backstory@realasian.com. For more information about us, we're at Real Asian, or go to realasian.com.